Today marks a pivotal moment in the architecture of American financial regulation. The Supreme Court just constrained presidential authority in ways that fundamentally alter how financial institutions must model policy risk, while simultaneously the Treasury Secretary gave official endorsement to what may be the most transformative monetary infrastructure change since Bretton Woods collapsed in 1971. We're watching two tectonic plates of the regulatory landscape shift simultaneously, and the fault lines are creating entirely new terrain. Let's start with what happened at the Supreme Court, because this ruling reaches far beyond trade policy. In a 6-3 decision, the court struck down the broadest framework for executive tariff authority, specifically the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Now, the president must rely on much more limited tools like Section 122 of the 1974 Trade Act, which restricts tariffs to 10-15% and limits their duration to just 150 days. On the surface, markets barely blinked, suggesting institutions had already positioned for this outcome. But that muted reaction masks something much more significant happening beneath the surface. What we're seeing is the emergence of regulatory uncertainty as an asset class itself. Financial firms have reportedly been purchasing tariff refund claims at 20-30 cents on the dollar, positioning for potential 3-5 times returns if those tariffs get reversed. Think about what that means. When the policy framework becomes unpredictable enough, the unpredictability itself creates tradable instruments. We've gone from trying to predict policy to literally trading the policy uncertainty. But here's the deeper structural implication. This ruling establishes precedent that reaches beyond trade into any area where executive authority has simply been assumed without explicit congressional approval. For financial services firms, this completely reshapes compliance frameworks. You can no longer build your regulatory risk models around executive action alone. You now need to account for multi-layered approval processes, legislative gridlock with 3-seat Senate and 4-seat House majorities, and dramatically reduced executive policy predictability. The regulatory fragmentation we're witnessing creates a new paradigm where compliance becomes exponentially more complex. There's also an immediate fiscal dimension here. The government collected roughly $300 billion in tariffs under the struck-down authority, compared to a baseline of $50 to $60 billion annually. Those excess collections may face refund obligations, creating immediate cash flow uncertainty for affected businesses and serious fiscal planning complications for government operations. For import-dependent fintech companies in particular, this represents meaningful relief from regulatory burden, while small and medium importers gain disproportionate advantages compared to multinationals that already diversified their supply chains. Now, while executive authority is being constrained in traditional regulatory spheres, something remarkable is happening in digital finance. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent stood before the Dallas Economic Club and declared stablecoins will be a big part of our future. This isn't a peripheral statement. This is the Treasury Secretary giving official sanction to what is effectively a parallel financial system. The stablecoin market has grown to $200 billion, and analyst Brent Johnson calls this moment as transformative to the monetary system as Bretton Woods collapsed in 1971. Let that sink in. We're not talking about innovation at the margins. We're talking about fundamental monetary infrastructure being rebuilt in real time with official government endorsement. The Genius Act establishes the regulatory foundation with full Treasury backing requirements but zero yield to holders. This creates extraordinary profit margins for compliant issuers, who capture the full 3.5% T-bill yield while paying nothing to stablecoin holders. It's an artificial guardrail designed to protect traditional bank deposits, but it's a guardrail facing inevitable political pressure. The pending Clarity Act attempts to resolve what can only be described as jurisdictional warfare between the SEC viewing stablecoins as securities, the FDIC seeing them as deposits, Treasury concerned about dollar policy, and the Fed focused on monetary policy implications. Building on that regulatory complexity, look at the competitive landscape forming. Current leaders Tether, which is the largest but non-US-based, and Circle, second largest and US-based, face regulatory divergence that will determine winners and losers. Meanwhile, JP Morgan and Fidelity have announced institutional settlement coin initiatives. Big tech is positioning for proprietary ecosystems with potential tokens from Google, Apple, and Microsoft. Traditional payment processors and remittance companies are staring at an existential threat from near-zero transaction costs. But here's the mechanism that should concern every central banker outside the United States. Brent Johnson calls it the dollar milkshake. Every dollar locked in offshore stablecoins denies the rest of the world that liquidity, while simultaneously creating structural demand for US treasuries. Johnson estimates that 25 to 50% of global non-dollar trade could migrate to stablecoins within a decade. We're talking about tens of trillions in potential market size. International jurisdictions face an impossible choice: allow dollar stablecoins and lose monetary sovereignty, or restrict them and stifle growth and innovation. Capital controls become the primary defense, but they're facing technological circumvention in real time.
This brings us to the banking sector, which is caught between two contradictory forces that are reshaping the entire industry. Kevin Warsh's Fed nomination signals a deliberate transition from Fed-dominated liquidity provision back to commercial banking channels through what he calls substantial deregulation. Regional banks, currently lagging the 7% aggregate commercial bank asset growth rate, are positioned as primary beneficiaries. The framework aims to reduce reserve requirements while increasing treasury holdings, enabling expanded lending capacity that supports embedded finance and banking as a service models that fintech companies depend on. Timeline suggests second half rate cuts become possible as coordination improves between monetary policy and banking regulation. But working against this entire deregulatory agenda is deposit migration. Every dollar in stablecoins is a dollar not in banks. That regulatory requirement preventing stablecoins from paying yield represents artificial protection for bank deposits, but it's protection that cannot hold indefinitely. When that guardrail falls, and it will, traditional banks face accelerated deposit flight on a scale we've never witnessed. Small community banks face particular vulnerability. Their numbers have declined from 14,000 to 4,000 over the past 20 years due to regulatory costs alone. Stablecoin competition accelerates this consolidation dramatically. The winners will be scale players with compliance infrastructure and fintech partnership capabilities. The losers will be regional institutions lacking digital transformation capacity. More importantly, there's substantial execution risk if reduced Fed intervention isn't offset by expanded commercial bank lending. The transition from Fed to bank liquidity provision, as one analyst notes, may be fraught with operational inefficiency. That's regulatory speak for this could go very wrong. Now we need to talk about AI, because the productivity gains and displacement risks are no longer theoretical. Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi provides the clearest current lens. 90% of his engineers have adopted AI tools, with 30% achieving measurable productivity improvements through automated code generation. But here's his projection that should concern every financial services professional. AI will replace 70 to 80% of human intellectual work within 10 years. The economics driving this are relentless. Token pricing has collapsed from $600 per million tokens with GPT-3 to 50 cents per million with Grok 4 Fast. That's a 1,200 times cost reduction in under 3 years. At current trajectories, AI enterprise becomes cheaper than Starbucks. We're talking $3.50 annually for 20,000 daily tokens. When the cost structure drops that dramatically, adoption becomes inevitable regardless of workforce implications. Looking at sector-specific impacts, AI now achieves PhD-level performance in accounting, tax, and legal document review with sub-1% error rates compared to 20% human error rates. Traditional professional services margins are collapsing. In market operations, AI-driven volatility patterns have already been demonstrated in crypto's 99% drawdown and recovery cycles. Human traders simply cannot match coordinated multi-venue execution capabilities. For compliance and risk management, prediction markets face obsolescence as AI models are projected to outperform human superforecasters within 2 years. The development economics transformation is particularly striking. AI coding tools have reduced mobile app development from 4-plus person teams to individual developers, opening markets that were previously uneconomic for niche applications. This democratization particularly affects personal finance management and investment habit formation tools, creating entirely new categories of viable fintech products. But we need to talk about the risks that aren't being priced. AI poisoning vulnerability means that only 250 books of malicious content can backdoor models regardless of size. Homogeneous training creates single point of failure risks across interconnected financial infrastructure. Real-time deepfake capabilities enable sophisticated social engineering attacks on financial institutions that current security frameworks weren't designed to defend against. More fundamentally, traditional monetary policy transmission mechanisms break down completely in an AI-dominated economy. Interest rate cuts drive GPU purchases rather than human hiring. The $5 trillion U.S. tax base, split between $1 trillion corporate and $4 trillion income tax, cannot support $5.3 trillion in universal basic income at poverty levels. We're heading toward a complete economic framework reconstruction, and the regulatory apparatus hasn't even begun to grapple with these implications. Which brings us to regulatory integrity and conflict of interest architecture. The Cantor-Fitzgerald case crystallizes concerns about whether current frameworks are adequate. Allegations emerge that the firm purchased tariff refund claims at 20 to 30 cents on the dollar, while former CEO Howard Lutnick served as Commerce Secretary, with company control transferred to family trusts. The firm denies these claims emphatically, calling them lies and stating they never happened. But the structural question persists regardless of the specific case. Are current beneficial ownership and conflict disclosure frameworks adequate for sophisticated family trust arrangements and shortened cooling off periods? If regulators design policy affecting markets where family trusts maintain beneficial interests, existing compliance structures may require fundamental strengthening. The revolving door between treasury, commerce, and financial institutions creates systemic risks around policy design potentially benefiting former employers or family interests. The stablecoin regulatory battle demonstrates how multiple agencies claiming authority creates both arbitrage opportunities and compliance uncertainty. Financial institutions must now manage not just regulatory requirements but interagency political dynamics. And internationally, resource nationalism is accelerating. Mali's government taking 35% stakes in mine expansions demonstrates shifting sovereign corporate power dynamics. As nations assert greater control over strategic assets, financial institutions face increased counterparty risk in cross-border arrangements. So here's the fintech thesis update. The regulatory landscape just fundamentally fragmented. Executive authority constraints create new complexity layers just as stablecoins gain official infrastructure status. Traditional banking faces existential deposit migration pressure, while AI eliminates the economic models underlying professional services and workforce assumptions. The compliance framework, the monetary framework, and the workforce framework are all being rebuilt simultaneously. What changed in the industry outlook today? The recognition that we're not managing incremental change within existing structures. We're watching parallel financial infrastructure emerge with official sanction, while the traditional regulatory architecture fragments. Position accordingly. Watching the rails. Until tomorrow.